Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean show. I'm Jarvis Smith, and this is the show that talks about the issues with the climate crisis, the problems that we're having in the world today, and how we can take responsibility and deal with those issues in our own personal lives, communities, and in business. We always have a very cool guest. Last week we had Joe Wood, and this week we've got the amazing Oliver Heath, who is a previous TV presenter actually for sustainable design, but now he's one of the world's leaders in biophilic design, so we'll be talking about that. But what I wanted to do first of all is going to be a norm for this show is talk about a bit of news that you can bring into your own lives around the climate crisis. Now, one of the bits of news that I've been really quite privy to over the last 15 years of leading the way in ethical lifestyle and restorative retail is how toxic our homes are. Like the products that we're using, the cleaning products, the materials, the paints on the walls, et cetera, and how much toxicity and pollution that creates in the home. So I wanted to bring a few of those just to your attention so that you could look out for them in your home and potentially change, swap, get rid of, etc., etc. So there were six major toxins in the home. And these are, so number one, your liquid fabric softeners and possible dryer sheets that you are using in your washing machines and dryers. So look out for those. There's ethanol, chloroform, which are possible links to diseases and unrest like Alzheimer's. So this is becoming much more scientifically proven that there is a connection with these chemicals and the after effects on our health. The other one, which is really interesting, actually, is candles and commercial air fresheners, aerosols. Now, we don't use aerosols so much anymore, but these particular products have been linked to behavioral disorders. Paraffin, of course, which is, you know, releases a carcinogen, benzene. So look out for those. If you're using candles at home, try and get the natural ones. Try and get the beeswax ones, possibly unscented or with natural scents. So that's really important. This is an interesting one. Frozen dinner trays, plastic storage containers, and of course, plastic food wrap. So we've got lots of alternatives now that you can use, again, as a beeswax product that you can use for wrapping up sandwiches and food wraps, and plastic storage containers. We all use them. And of course, plastic is actually very useful, but make sure you're using ones that are, you know, they have a certified plastic usage. So it's not containing lethal toxic products. And it's things like bisophenol, which is a BPA. And that has been linked to fertility, behavioral issues, physical development in girls. I mean, you know, really quite serious stuff for our families. Another, furniture polish and bathroom and household cleaners. This is the big one. So household products are not closely regulated. So they can contain formaldehyde, nitrobenzene, methanol chloride. Now, the thing is that all of these ingredients in the products, they are, of course, audited. And because of the small usage of the amount of ingredients in each product, then they do actually get through the legal framework. The problem is that what you're not remembering is we're using these probably every day. So that little amount adds up and adds up and adds up and adds up. And then by the end of the week, you've got this concoction of different ingredients that are actually causing a lethal concoction in the home, and you're breathing in that air. It was interesting, a survey was done. A lot of people's homes inside are more toxic than they are outside. So really, really look out for that. There is some others, there's PVC and vinyl that are in products. You know, you might want to look at your bed's mattress, you know, tablecloths, curtains, things like that. So do have a look around. Do some research, make sure that you're able to detoxify the home as much as possible and bring a healthier and kinder environment to you, your family, and of course, your pets. And so that brings me nicely onto this next guest, which is Oliver Heath. I'm going to bring Oliver in, but just to say that when Oliver and I first met, he was very clearly one of the world's leaders in sustainable design. He's now gone on to specialize in biophilic design, which is a bit of a mouthful to say the least. So I'd like to bring you in, Oliver, and just wonder if you could firstly just come in and say hello to everybody, and then perhaps explain to us, what is biophilic? What does it mean? And what is, how does design link to that? So Oliver, welcome to the show. It's a great honor to have you here as a guest, and we're really looking forward to getting as much information from you as possible to understand the biophilic nature and what it means.
Well, thank you, Jarvis. It's, as ever, a total pleasure to be here speaking with you. So your first question, what is biophilic design? Well, biophilia quite literally means a love of nature, and it explains humans' innate attraction to nature and to natural processes. And it's an idea that is what we call an evolutionary concept. It recognizes that as human beings, we've lived in very close connection to nature, healthy forms of nature for our basic human survival. So you can imagine as a cave person, it was absolutely essential that we found landscapes that could support life, landscapes that had water, that had plants and food, fauna and flora, and that over millennia, we actually built up an ability to recognize landscapes that could support life and allow us to thrive and flourish, but equally to recognize those that were potentially threatening to our basic human survival. So the idea of biophilic design or biophilia still today is that we essentially have a genetic inheritance that allows us to recognize spaces that can support life and equally those that are potentially threatening and to make choices about the spaces that we occupy. So biophilic design essentially looks at how we can connect with elements of nature in our built environment to immediately allow that perception that here's a space that can support life, where you're not just going to survive, but you're going to thrive and flourish. And so the ultimate aim is to create exciting, stimulating environments that provide you with everything that you need to support your physical, mental, and emotional state, but equally to sort of to recognize that we need to create spaces where people can stop, rest, relax, and recuperate. In our very busy, always on, urbanized lives, we don't often really get the opportunity just to stop, switch off, and rest and recuperate in the way that we do. So as a result, we're seeing high levels of burnout, fatigue, high levels of illness. And I think biophilic design has many, many answers to give as to how we can alleviate and mitigate those problems.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much for giving us such a clear definition of what it means. I mean, I keep hearing you say nature, and you know, my thing has been certainly over the last 15 years is we've completely lost touch with nature. We've completely lost our respect and our relationship with this very being that I believe is conscious, and perhaps a lot of indigenous people on this world today do as well, that has literally provided every resource for our businesses, for our food, for our well-being, for our houses, for our computers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yet how have we lost the connection with the very thing that provides life for us? It's just insane. So talk to me a bit more about nature. What's your understanding of nature? How do you relate to nature? What is nature to you?
Well, I mean, nature, I guess, is as close to a religion as I probably get. So, you know, recognizing, understanding its importance and value to me personally, but also to us as a wider culture and society, is absolutely fundamental. As a society, it could be said that we started to lose a connection with nature, perhaps at around the time of the Industrial Revolution, as we moved from living in rural settings into city centres and became more urbanised. And as a result, and inevitably, we lost connection with the soil, with the kind of diurnal changes, with the seasonal changes, with all those sort of millions of little touch points with nature. As we moved into cities and started to live in sort of built up geometric urbanized forms, we lost connection with nature. And as human beings, we've become, you know, very arrogant to think that actually we sit at the top of a pyramid and all of nature exists beneath us to serve our needs. And we can pillage nature in a very linear way without ever giving back, and that human ingenuity and technology will somehow find a way to restore some sense of balance. Well, what we're now seeing with biodiversity loss and the climate crisis is that that balance is very, very fragile. And actually, we're starting to recognize that we don't sit at the top of a triangle with nature beneath us to serve our needs, but actually we're very much part of an interconnected web of life where all elements of nature, fauna and flora, deserve our respect. They have identity, culture, incredible value, far beyond that we probably recognize, and that we need to think in a more life-centered way about the whole environment around us, putting ourselves very much within a circle of life as opposed to the top of a pyramid. So I think that's sort of absolutely fundamental to the way that we think as designers and recognize that when we create buildings, it's not just about creating a physical entity that serves a specific human need, that we recognize there are unintended consequences for all life every time we kind of create a space or a building. And we need to think about the impact of that and how we can be more regenerative in the way that we create a built environment, regenerative for human beings and our health and well-being, but also all life around us.
Wow. So what do we need to do? Do we all need to go and get out of our houses and move back to the caves and the mountains and the trees? And what's the solution in this modern crazy world that we're living in right now?
Well, I think many of us do yearn for some greater level of simplicity without the internet and social media and everything that seems to have offered us incredible efficiencies in life, but actually in the end have just sped things up. So biophilic design is kind of a little bit more complex than just sort of connecting and bringing plants into spaces. There are three key ways that we enhance connections to nature in the built environment. The first is what we call a direct connection to nature. So there are many forms of nature. So it might be about enhancing natural light, bringing fresh air into buildings, thinking about the use of water inside or out. It might be about the soft, gentle movement that we see in nature, the sounds of nature, all those sort of sensory elements that we see. It is also, of course, about how we bring plants and trees into our built environment. So that's what we call the direct connection to nature. It's kind of all those multi-sensory connections. The second aspect is what we call an indirect connection to nature. And this is how we mimic or evoke a feeling of nature in buildings using natural materials, natural colors, patterns, shapes, and even technologies that can mimic nature. And what the research shows that even indirect or mimicked forms of nature can facilitate stress reduction. And the third aspect is recognizing that we have what we call a human spatial response, that as cave dwellers and hunter-gatherers, we were never on the whole time. So this human spatial response idea suggests that we need to create buildings and spaces and cities that are exciting and stimulating and aspirational, spaces that encourage us to use them, but also to recognize that as human beings, we do get tired and fatigued, and we need to manage that by creating spaces that offer prospect and retreat, spaces where we can stop, rest, relax, and recuperate. So that connection to nature very much recognizes that as human beings, we're part of the natural world and seeks to create a series of spaces that supports our physical, mental, and emotional states across a variety of different tasks and across a variety of different times of day and season. And that's what's really important, is we think of this sort of nature connection as what we call a nature diet triangle, recognizing that we need to bring touch points of nature in across a series of different spaces, be that sort of across a cityscape or a neighborhood or a building or an interior, but also across different times of the year, whether that's annual or monthly, weekly, or even daily. So we need to think of those continual touch points of nature and how they can help us to manage stress, to aid recuperation, but also to bring us all together to enhance our experience of space and place, and of course, the people in it, to enhance a sense of global community.
Gosh, it's like listening to a preacher man in a service, and I don't mean that disrespectfully at all, but it just naturally, no pun intended, just flows as a truth, as the real way to be. So thank you for that. It reminds me of this pandemic that we went through in 2020, and everyone was suddenly confined to their homes and were only allowed out for an hour a day, and this kind of explosive reconnection that people had with the outside world, with nature, listening to, I could hear bird song that I haven't heard in years, and the dolphins were in the river, and of course that didn't happen in my river in the Wolf, but of course in some places it did. But an air quality and air pollution coming down because we were suddenly stopped living our active lives. But how do we do that in the home then? I mean, I know you've begun to touch upon it, but what examples have you got of where you've created these spaces, and what has been the outcome of those spaces? Like, what have you tangibly been able to understand and kind of audit and know that it's having a positive effect for the better?
Yeah, it's interesting that the development of biophilic design as a design movement has really stemmed from the commercial world, because one of the interesting things about biophilic design is it's what we call an evidence-based approach. So there's 40 years of empirical research carried out by environmental psychologists that have demonstrated that when we connect and enhance spaces with nature, it can improve the intended outcome of spaces, but also reduce some of those negative costs and issues. So the studies and the research have shown that actually when we bring elements of nature in, it can, increase productivity in the workplace by between 6 and 15%. We can increase the speed of learning by 20 to 26% in schools. Hotel rooms get rented out more quickly with increased costs. And in our homes, we can reduce stress, aid recuperation, plus more deeply connect with one another. So in a way, we're learning from the commercial world where there is a financial imperative. And what we're now starting to do is to funnel some of that learning and some of those ideas into the home to realize some of those benefits. And I think what was important for us about the pandemic was that, during that period, we all started to realize the kind of very clear impact that our built environment has on our physical and mental well-being. When we're surrounded by just the four walls, when we're not commuting, we're not going to cafes and theaters and restaurants, we recognize that actually these buildings that we exist in do have an amazing impact on our mental and physical state. So we started to recognize the importance and need to connect with nature in all sorts of ways. So people were getting out, they were taking their daily walk, they were seeking out parks or the seaside or local areas of natural habitat, and they were finding ways to connect with those. So, this doesn't necessarily need to be an expensive thing. It's about looking at the local resources that exist all around you. We've got loads and loads of other tips that I definitely want to share with you. I'm conscious that we might be about to go to a commercial. So we're going to come back to this.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to very quickly flip to a break. Thank you for that, Oliver. We've got plenty more time to come back and have a deeper dive. I do want to, I know you brought a couple of songs to play that have a deep connection for you. I want to talk to you about family and what you're doing in your own home and how you're dealing with your family environment. But let's cut to the commercial break. We're here from UK Health Radio, and I'll see you back here shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Oliver, welcome back. So please continue with where you were, because what I'm really, really fascinated by is why haven't we been doing this for, forever. I mean, what's taken us away from this kind of natural way of linking with nature, the natural world, and living in that environment in our homes? What happened?
Yeah, I think as human beings, we have decided that we are so brilliant and so capable and so technologically advanced that we don't really need to rely on nature, and that, you know, we're a master of it, and that, you know, it all exists here to serve our needs. You know, it's a very arrogant perception.
I was going to say, we've become arrogant, haven't we?
Oh, it's incredible, really, that we think that, you know, animals don't have feelings or emotions, but anybody that owns a pet, be that a cat or a dog, knows immediately the incredible emotional connection that they have and the expressiveness of that. So I think, you know, we haven't really forgotten it. It's just we've sort of decided that actually we don't need it so much. Mm. So a lot of what I end up telling people is stuff that they already know. It's just it sort of needs reinforcing. And I think in a way, packaging it up as an idea such as biophilic design allows people to think about how they can sort of bring nature back into their lives in a more concentrated way, and recognize that actually the built environment that we have created from a technological perspective to shelter us from the weather, from the elements, from life, to make us safe and secure, hasn't necessarily considered our physical and mental needs. And so what biophilic design does is it sort of seeks to sort of elicit or remind us of some of the incredible well-being that we experience when we're in nature, and bring that back into our home to support us and to make us feel better, and also to connect us with one another. And so actually there's an incredible amount that we can do even within our existing homes to retrofit them and enhance that connection to nature.
Nice. I'm loving this. I could listen to you all day. It's just.
I think we're very much on a par with one another on that, Jarvis. I think that's well known.
Well, we are. I mean, you know, for everyone that's listening, I have to tell you that, you know, Oliver is a dear friend. I would consider him certainly to be my best friend, and we know we've been on this journey and path together. So it's really nice for me just to kind of, you know, hear this actually in a completely different way than us just sitting around having a chat. So it's fantastic. Thank you. I want to, I asked you before you came on whether you had a song or two that you would like to play on the show that would perhaps be a soundtrack to this very urgent calling around this thing we're calling a climate crisis. And you came back to me with two songs, which I think both are incredible. We're going to go with your first choice. So, do you want to tell us just what the song is, then we'll play it, what it is and who it's by, should I say, then we'll play it, and then we'll pick up at the back end of it, and we can talk about how it's, why you chose it. Would that be okay? So what's the song?
So the song is Fatboy Slim remix of Right Here, Right Now that features the incredible Greta Thunberg. Okay, so yeah, that was my song.
Okay, I think
it's pretty powerful, isn't it?
It's super powerful. It's very moving. And I just have to tell everybody that we could only play a short clip of it because that's all we had access to. So if anybody wants to find that song, they can find it on YouTube and Spotify. Oliver, we both have daughters. And actually, we've got daughters at very similar ages. You know, playing that song, listening to Greta, what does it evoke in you?
I've got to say, it really brings a tear to my eye. It's sort of, I find it incredibly emotive, because, you know, it sort of shifts responsibility onto us as an older generation, maybe not having done enough. And I know that's not necessarily, you know, I have spent many, many years talking within my own sphere of the built environment about how we can reduce the impact, to mitigate the impact of our built environment on the climate, and even start to become regenerative. But still, you know, it evokes that sense of enormous responsibility that we have to future generations, to think not just about what's going on right now, you know, all the issues, but what the impact of that is. And I think Greta Thunberg is just the most incredible communicator. It's partly about her oratory, it's partly about her age, the sort of the simplicity with which she puts this incredibly powerful message, but it is a rallying call, you know. And I think coupled together with Fatboy Slim, And his, his really powerful track, it's just such a great mix up. So for me, this is just a really important rallying call that, it's not too late, that we can and we must act, and we must all accept some responsibility for whatever we can do within our sphere of influence to make change happen and to ensure that future generations are kind of impacted as little as possible by the climate crisis and biodiversity loss. But we do need to act and do more.
I love that. It's a great message. I mean, we are all, we are all have been part of the problem. Some of us, many of us, are now trying to be a solution, but the problem still exists. And actually, it seems to be getting worse. So thank you for that. So a very important message to us all. Be the best that you can be when you're dealing with issues, however small, however big they are. Just know that they are having a huge impact, particularly if we all rally together. So thank you for that. I want to just ask you about, you're a father, you've got children. We know how much of an issue the climate crisis is. If science is correct, we have to reach our fossil fuel usage peak by in the next year, I think it is, and then decline by 50% by 2030. Clearly, that's not going to happen because there is no global commitment to it. What do you tell your girls when they ask you about this thing that the news is calling a crisis and the weather pattern changes? And how do you communicate with your children about it?
Yeah, I mean, it is an enormous and I think quite frankly terrifying situation that they're facing with what we're hearing in the news, what we're seeing of floods and droughts and wildfires, this sort of unpredictable weather patterns. And I think it's very easy to be disempowered, to go, well, what can I do? I'm just, it's just the tiniest drop in the ocean, not to use this plastic bottle, not to use that, and as children, they're not necessarily engaging with the wider world under their own terms, because they're living in our house, they're being transported around in our electric car, they are, so we are sort of steering them. And I think the message is that, take responsibility, do what you can, and ensure that you're having as big an influence as you can, and communicate that to your wider social group. They're all connected through social media networks, and make sure that you're spreading these important messages. Don't be overwhelmed. Make sure that you're just going, if you care about something, do it. So I live in Brighton, which is obviously on the south coast of England by the sea. It's been really important for me not to impose overt negative messaging that disempowers them, but to say, look, engage with the natural world, recognize that it's important, recognize that it's bigger than you are, that it will crush you if you don't respect it, and look after it as much as you can. So doing important things like engaging my children with growing food in the garden, from understanding and recognizing different animals, fauna and flora, are really important things. So many children can't even recognize the difference between a wasp and a bee, for instance. So getting them outside, climbing trees, going in swings, going on river walks, I take my children surfing. So we go to the sea, we put wetsuits on, and then we clean up the beach a little bit as we're coming out the water. So we'll pick up plastic, we'll put it in the bin, and respecting it, recognizing that if it's given you pleasure, make sure that you look after it so that we can use it. And so making them feel that they are part of nature, engaging with it, and responsible for its well-being are kind of really important messages for me to give them.
Yeah, lovely. I think there's a lot we can take from that, so thank you. And especially that you were such an expert in the space as well, so thank you for that.
But you know what? The other thing is, any father knows, your children do not want to hear anything that comes out of your mouth.
It's not cool, is it?
So it's really not cool. They really just sort of like, whatever you say, Dad, is just stupid. I say, like, but actually, I'm a world expert in biophilic. Yeah, stupid though, aren't you, Dad? So you've got to make nature enjoyable and engaging. You've got to really kind of draw them into it. And they may be resistant at first, but if you can make it fun, and nature doesn't just have to be peaceful and tranquil, you can have an amazing time, you know, going surfing, going mountain biking, you know, engaging with nature and in a way that is fun, building a fire, building a camp, climbing a tree, making a tree house, a rope swing, you know, whatever you can do is really important. There is this issue called nature deficit disorder, which is a term coined by the author Richard Louv, that recognized that actually, for a number of reasons, children have been disconnected with nature. And this is really, really problematic if we are going to get our future generations to engage with nature and bring it into their lives. So nature deficit disorder has basically been brought around about by a perception that nature is dangerous, by an increase in the proliferation of technology that is very engaging, be that kind of smartphones or gaming systems, but also by a lack of access to private land. So if we don't allow children space to get out and be in nature, to climb a tree, to build a camp, to make a rope swing, then how are they ever going to learn so many of those important physiological and psychological lessons? So I'm very conscious that this sort of nature deficit disorder issue exists. So my choice to live in a city that has close access to it has been really, really important in my life.
Lovely. And you know what, that brings a beautiful segue. I mean, it was as if I'd have asked and lined that up, but I was going to ask you, what projects have you been involved in, getting back to biophilic design, bringing that design into buildings? Is there anything that you you could share with us, a project or something that's up and coming, that in terms of what you did and what was created and what the knock-on effect of that was? It'd be lovely to hear your personal projects.
Yeah, so I run a design company. It's called Oliver Heath Design, and we specialize in biophilic design, thinking about how we bring nature into buildings to help people realize the intended function of that space, but also to reduce some of those negative costs that happen when people get stressed and burnt out. So things like absenteeism or presenteeism when people are kind of sitting at their desk but they aren't focused, but also to, you know, prevent, you know, illness and absenteeism and staff turnover, all of those negative costs. So a lot of our projects are around commercial spaces. So how we bring connections to nature into the workplace, but also hospitality spaces, like hotels or restaurants or kind of wellness spaces, and also into the home. But there was one project that for me was really, really incredible and really, it was probably the smallest project we ever did. But maybe the most rewarding, and it was basically to create a restorative space for children in a special needs school, where the children had were particularly sort of had neurodiverse conditions. So basically, in this school, it's called the Garden School in Hackney, and what we were presented with was a very sort of small wedge-shaped room. So the room was about 5 meters long. It was 2 meters wide at one end and 3 meters wide at the other. So not very big, but it sat right next to a playground. And what the teachers at the school told us was that the children, because of the sort of the level of autism and Asperger's that the children were experiencing, was that the children were getting overwhelmed with the noise and the activity in the playground. And so didn't actually find break times restorative in the way that they should have. They were actually getting much more anxious and tense and stressed. So they wanted to use this little room that sat next to the playground to relax and restore the children better. Now, because of the neurodiverse conditions that the children were having, we weren't allowed to bring any forms of nature in, like plants and greenery, because they just kind of were fascinated by it and they pulled it apart. So what we did is we relied on these indirect connections of how we mimic or evoke a feeling of nature in the room. So we did three things. We created window seats that allow the children to look out onto the activity of the playground, but from high in the safety of a pane of glass. So we gave them prospect to look at the activity, to look at everything that was going on, but to feel safe at these window seats. The second thing we did is we created these little niches that were sort of hexagonal niches, and we carpeted them with, we worked with this company called Interface, who were the kind of funders of the project. They're a very sustainable carpet company. And we lined these little hexagonal niches with carpet. So the children could climb into these little niches. They weren't very high off the ground. And when they climbed in, it completely changed the acoustics of that space. And it immediately created a sense of calm and relaxation, but also what we call a sense of refuge. So the children could sit back in these little niches. They could look out. The sound changed. They could feel the texture of the carpet tiles under their skin. And it just brought this incredible sense of calm and relaxation. Mm. Now, the third thing that we did in the space was we wanted to energize and stimulate them prior to going back to the lesson. So we created a little installation that created cause and effect. So basically, it was a series of little touch pads that when they touch this press plate, on it was a natural texture, a leaf or pebbles or artificial grass. And when they press that touch plate, the sound of nature would come through a speaker, sound of water or the beach or birds tweeting in the tree, and also lights would change. And as they press the different touch pads, they would feel those natural textures, but also hear these natural sounds, and lights would change as well. So you got this kind of multi-sensory cause and effect that was incredibly exciting and stimulating for them. And, you know, what was fantastic to see was as soon as the children came into the room, they started to use the different spaces as we saw. They used the window seats. They crawled into the little hexagonal niches. They started playing with this cause and effect installation. And it was just amazing to see them use the space and start to relax, restore and recuperate and put them in a completely different and improved mental state before going back to class. So that was just a really gratifying, exciting project for us to work on.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. I want to come back to you on that because I want to ask what the feedback was on cause and effect. So we're going to cut to another commercial break. So Oliver, give me a minute or so and we'll be back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Oliver, thank you, thank you. So let's just continue with that for a minute. So what was the feedback you got from, you know, either from the students themselves or perhaps in this particular situation, the, you know, the peers around them after you'd embedded this experiential, you know, change that they'd had? What were the noticeable changes for the kids?
I think there was an immediate sense that the children were engaging with the architecture in a way that allowed them just to stop, rest and relax. So many of the spaces in our built environment are designed in order for us to be on the go, to be productive, to be creative, to be go, go, go. And actually what we forget is that as human beings, physiologically, we never did that. We might hunt and gather. We might have intense periods of activity, but there were always moments where we would stop, rest, relax, and recuperate. Mm. And what our built environment rarely does is recognize our historical physiological needs to stop, rest, relax, and recuperate. And one of the interesting things about nature is that it can help us to do that more efficiently than any other design opportunity that we have. So biophilic design is essential to help us to stop and reflect on the moments gone by, to recuperate, to reduce stress, to prevent that potential for burnout, and to reset us for a task that we're about to go ahead. It creates these incredibly powerful, mindful moments that keep us grounded. And as we move forward into the future, it's essential that we find ways of bringing these nature connections in to facilitate that sense of mindfulness, to get us to connect with the wider natural world, to recognize our impact and how we can be more beneficial and regenerative to it in the wider kind of environmental issues. So, you know, in the future, the kind of need for connections to nature is going to become more and more apparent.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, I'd like to, you know, have a deeper dive with you in a moment about that and what people can do in their own homes, actually, what simple advice you might give to people that can begin to do that. But before we do that, I want to play your second song. So the second song you've given us, do you want to just tell us what the song is and who it's by? And then we'll talk briefly about it once everybody's heard the song.
Sure. So it's just a really beautiful harmonic song by Richard Ashcroft. who was the lead singer of The Verve, and his song is called Nature is the Law.
Okay, well, what a beautiful song. Absolutely. Gosh, it moves you, doesn't it? Thank you for that, Oliver. What does it do for you? Why did you choose that song?
I think it's just got this sort of beautiful sense of fluid harmony that reminds me of being in nature. You know, as human beings, we tend to really overcomplicate things. You know, we've created these massive issues in our life through the burning of fossil fuels. And now we're looking to, you know, use technology to suck out the carbon dioxide out of the air. And what the song reminds me is that nature is so fundamental to restoring balance in the planet. And it doesn't need to be that complicated. We should be looking towards nature and the natural solutions that it offers, to respect and to learn from indigenous wisdom that it is already understanding so much of what we need to relearn. And that song just has this sort of beautiful, sort of fluid sort of harmony. It sort of reminds a little bit of the Beach Boys. So, you know, as a kind of, like, I grew up as a kind of windsurfer and surfer. And so, you know, that sort of harmonic quality is so wonderful. But it just has that sort of beautiful fluidity that I just sort of drift into, that it goes, you know, nature's the law, nature's got the answers. It's all there. We can do this, you know, and the solutions are there if we look towards nature and respect that.
Yeah, I love that. There's a couple of things that really reminded me when you said, when you talked about, you know, we're looking for these technologies to pull the carbon out of the air. Well, hello, trees do that. If we hadn't cut so many trees down, we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in. That's got to be a biophilic kind of thing, well, right? It's a natural.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you bring nature into cities and it can do the most incredible things. You know, nature can produce oxygen, remove CO2. It can take toxins out of the environment, like pollutants. When you have trees and plants, it can actually prevent flooding. It can reduce urban heat island effects. So it can cool cities down. Mm. It creates lovely shady spots for us to inhabit. It supports biodiversity. You're like, wow. I mean, think of one man-made thing that could do so many different things. And that's just the introduction of trees and greenery into our cityscapes. So when you think about it like that, you know, the solutions are many to the problems that we've created. And, you know, it can be as simple as just welcoming nature back in and creating more beautiful, habitable, healthy spaces for us all.
Yeah, you know, well, that is going to
be... We all win.
Yeah, no, we do. Absolutely. It's going to bring us nicely onto the next segue as well. Sorry to cut you in. The one last thing I wanted to say is, you talked about Indigenous, and I keep reminding myself about this and speak to everybody I can do about it, but we're all Indigenous. Every single human being on this planet is Indigenous to planet Earth. The problem is we've lost our connection to the Indigenous ways because of industrialization, religion, politics, big business, etc., etc. So it's a natural truth within us, right? So it's just by, as far as I can see, by reconnecting with nature and, you know, using nature as recognizing it as being part of us and us being part of it, then you begin to reform and rebalance this very natural relationship. But tell us how, give us a few tips. We've got roughly about 5 minutes. It's about the last segment of the show.
Okay, so Jarvis has cut out a little bit. Okay. So it's... you've cut out a little bit, Jarvis, so it's my opportunity to dive in, to take over. I think what you're going to ask me is give us some tips for ways that we can bring nature into our homes. So there are some really simple things we could do. Fundamentally, the most important thing we can do is to enhance natural light in our homes. So that, you know, if you're doing a building project, make your windows a little bit bigger, put in some skylights, put in some sun tubes that draw light from your roof down into your building. So that's if you're doing a big building project. But if you're not, then simple things you can do is, firstly, you know, keep your windows clean. That's really important across the winter. Pull back your curtains. So make sure you're not blocking any natural light coming in. Make sure you remove any obstructions from the outside, like foliage. Do whatever you can to make sure you enhance natural light. Position furniture nearer windows so that you can actually get more natural light coming in. Bounce light off windowsills and you know, surfaces as well, you know, using reflective paints. Now, the reason why natural light is so important for us is that actually it affects our circadian rhythms. And our circadian rhythms are our body's reactions to periods of light and dark across a 24-hour period. It affects our body, our mood, mood, our behavior, and our hormone release of melatonin and serotonin, which are the body's sleep-wake hormones. So when we have a balanced circadian rhythm, it means that we kind of feel tired at night, we sleep well, and we wake up feeling rested, alert, and energized for the day ahead. The problem is really that we've got so many artificial forms of natural light or artificial forms of light in our lives that it disrupts our circadian rhythm. So, you know, think about natural light. It changes in color from the morning as it goes from orange to yellow and becomes quite blue and stimulating in the middle of the day. And then it goes back in a similar pattern across the night. And, you know, when we have an electric light, it's just a single color. It's just on. So reconnecting with natural light is really important for getting a balanced circadian rhythm, and that will affect your sleep. So if you get a balanced circadian rhythm, you'll sleep well, and sleep is absolutely key to interpersonal relationships, to your ability to focus, to concentrate, to reducing ADHD. But also, you know, if we don't sleep well over a longer period of time, we get a risk of diabetes, obesity, cancer, and depression. So having a balanced circadian rhythm, making sure you respect sleep, having a good, healthy sleep regime is really important. Bringing plants into your homes, plants can do amazing things. You know, not only are they beautiful, they add texture and color and pattern. They remove toxins, they modify temperature and humidity. So bringing plants into your home or making sure you've got views out onto plants is really important. If you can't, then make sure you get out, go and find a local park, go and surround yourself and immerse yourself in nature and greenery at least once a day. Indoor air quality is something that I know that you were mentioning before is really important. So many of our homes are now sealed up. So making sure that you ventilate your home properly, make sure you don't put any toxins into your home through paints and varnishes and finishes. Open your windows, particularly in the middle of the day or when traffic's lower, is really, really good. Outdoor air quality is often much better than indoor air quality. Try not to burn things. So combustion is a really big polluter in our homes, and it creates PM10s and 2.5s, which are particulates. So, you know, if you put a spoon over a candle, you get all these kind of little the black marks. Those are the particulates that come off candles. And making sure that you ventilate your home and you clean it regularly, getting rid of all that dust is really, really important. So, you know, there are loads and loads of little things. We've actually written a book called Design a Healthy Home, which you can buy, which has got over 100 tips for bringing nature into your home, but also creating a healthier place to live. And you can buy these, you know, Design a Healthy Home. It's basically available in loads of different online bookstores. I'm sure you know the ones. But there's lots of tips of how to connect with nature in that and how to create a healthier place to live in, whether you own a home or whether you're renting for the first time.
Amazing, amazing. Oliver, thank you. You've been a plethora of wisdom and information and resource. Thank you so much. To have you on the show as our second guest for me is such a treat. It's great to hang out with you. We must do it in person more often.
Yeah.
I'm now up in North Yorkshire and you're down in Brighton, our old abode, so we must get together. How do people find you? So I know your Instagram is Oliver.
Yeah, so people can find us.
So people can connect with you there. You've got a website.
Yep, the website is Oliver Heath Design. Yeah, the website's Oliver Heath Design. So you can find out more about the work that we do. We've also got an online course there called Biophilic Design in the Home. So if you want to learn more about how to bring biophilic design in, there's an introduction to biophilia, but then also how to apply the principles at home. And then we're on Instagram, Oliver Heath Design. So there's loads of ways that we can connect and you can learn more about the work that we do to creating happier and healthier places to live and work.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being our guest.
It's a total pleasure, Jarvis. Yeah, it's as ever. It's lovely to speak with you.
Yeah, you've been a treat. Thank you so much. So just moving on, we're in the last few minutes of the show now. Just to say a couple of reference points. We talked about toxicity in the home at the beginning. If you want to find out more news and anything that's going to inspire you to live a more sustainable life, you can go to our company, which is mygreenpod.com. There's over 4,500 articles on there written by my lovely wife and editor-in-chief, Katie Hill. And it's just a resource, a plethora, again, of more information. And I also just wanted to say that, you know, I'm a signed recording artist. I'm a musician, a singer-songwriter. I don't get time to do it much of late. But the song that you're hearing in our clips in the promotional bit about the show Lean Into Clean, it's a song called Save the World, and it's originally sung by the Swedish House Mafia. But I was at a climate conference in Stockholm a couple of years ago, got chatting to Greta Thunberg and some of the MAPA activists that we were working with, the Fridays for Future movement. And we decided to make this song. So I was asked to sing it. So the music that you're hearing is a cover version of Save the World that I sing. And the reason I'm mentioning it to you is this, is that I've, as an artist, I didn't want to make money from the song. So I've donated 100% of all the royalties that I make from the song to Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Futures MAPA. Now, MAPA means the most affected people and areas. They tend to be the young activists that are in the global south, but not just, all over the world. And so 100% of the royalties are donated to Fridays for Future MAPA movement. Now, if we get 1 million plays, it'll raise a few hundred quid. If we get 100 million plays, it'll raise a few hundred thousand. And if we get 1 billion plays, it would raise a million quid, right, for that MAPA movement, which is amazing. So it doesn't cost anybody anything. You can just search on any digital platform, Shopify, YouTube, Amazon, the whole lot. All you have to do is play it. So you don't even need to like it. You can play the song, you can press repeat, you can turn the volume down, go to sleep, and there it is. It's racking up cash that we can donate to the Fridays for Future movement, supported by Greta Thunberg. So please check out the song. We're going to play the song now. It's called Save the World by yours truly, Jarvis Smith. It's been an absolute pleasure being with you guys. That's Lean Into Clean. See you next week.